People first organizations will win in the future of work.
Your only real asset is your people.
We all want purpose-driven work.
HR-led organization is the
future. Sorry, but leaders don't lead empty desks and empty shop floors.
Welcome to the People Strategy Leaders Show. I'm your host, Sri Chalapa, founder and president of Engagedly, and a serial entrepreneur in technology, films, and music. This is where we talk to people leaders, business strategists, and organizational savants about leading in the time of change. What is working, what is not working, and more importantly, what we should be thinking about. Stick around to the end of the show. We will reveal how you can be our next guest. And now, let's engage.
Hello, and welcome to People Strategy Leaders Podcast. This is Sri Chalapa, your host. Today, I'm joined with Dr. Ruth Gotian. Dr. Ruth Gotian is the Chief Learning Officer, Associate Professor of Education in Anesthesiology, and former Assistant Dean of Mentoring and Executive Director of Mentoring Academy at Weill Cornell Medicine. She has been hailed by the Nature and Columbia University as an expert in mentorship and leadership development, and is currently a contributor to Forbes and Psychology Today, where she writes about optimizing success. She also has a weekly show and podcast with the same name, where she gathers high achievers to talk about their journey to success. In 2021, she was one of 30 people worldwide to be named in the Thinkers 50 radar list, dubbed the Oscars of Management Thinking, is a semifinalist for the Forbes 50 over 50 list. She regularly publishes in such journals as Nature, Scientific American, Academic Magazine, Psychology Today, Forbes, and Harvard Business Review. She's the co-editor of a book on medical education, won numerous mentoring awards, and is the author of The Success Factor, Developing the Mindset and Skillset for Peak Performance. Her new book, Financial Times Guide to Mentoring, is coming out in June 2024. Well, Dr. Ruth Gotian, thank you for being on my show and looking forward to having this discussion.
I'm excited to talk about high achievers.
Excellent. I was talking about the book right before we started the call, The Success Factor, which is a really interesting read. I really like the book so far. I'm reading it. One of the things that, and as a CEO myself, I also think about what can I do to be more successful, more high achieving, and get my team to do the same thing. What would you say is the secret ingredient, if there is one, of high achievers and successful people?
I think it's not one, it's four. There's four things that they do, but I want to start with the premise that if people are thinking they're just going to copy and paste what other people are doing, that's not going to work. So if you ever heard wake up at 5 a.m. and make your bed before you do anything else and read for 5 hours a day, and you're trying it and you wonder why it doesn't work, it's because those are habits. You can't copy other people's habits. But what you can do is emulate their mindsets and make it bespoke for you and your lifestyle and your career. So there's four mindsets that I found in all high achievers. And I've interviewed astronauts and Nobel Prize winners and Olympians and NBA champions, Fortune 500 CEOs, and it was the same four things. And that's when I realized if an astronaut and an Olympic figure skater have the same four mindsets, then the rest of us mere mortals can have it too. So the four mindsets, we'll go through the four of them, but the first one, which is really the foundation of it all, is really to tap into the intrinsic motivation. Now, so often we have heard do what you love and all of that stuff. And yes, it's true, but that's not always enough. This has to be the reason you wake up in the morning, the reason you cannot quiet your mind at night, the reason that you're thinking about all of these things all the time. You're not doing it for the awards, rewards, promotions, or bonuses. You're doing it because this is what you were put on this earth to do. And it's what we call in adult learning intrinsic motivation. That's the first one. And I'll pause there in case you have any questions about that first one.
Yeah, no, I really like that one, the interesting intrinsic motivation, because a lot of us do things because we are told to do those things or we get paid to do those things. But when there's no immediate award that you get from either outside or a pressure or the stress, a lot of people wouldn't do it. And that's, I think, what you're talking about in terms of intrinsic motivation, the driver from inside versus external forces to make you.
Exactly. If you think about it, the ones who did it for the Olympic medal or any of those awards, if you're doing that for that award, that recognition, that's when other people are judging you. And that's really hard to maintain that motivation when it's for someone else, when it's not for you. I don't know of a single Nobel Prize winner who stopped doing science just because they won the Nobel Prize. If anything, they doubled down and they did more. So that's the proof that it comes, that's intrinsic motivation, that it comes from within. And in the book, I talk about it and give a lot of exercises how to tap into your intrinsic motivation. So that's the first one. You ready for the second one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. We talk about hard work and perseverance and grit and a work ethic, and that shouldn't be any surprise, right? The people who are willing to outwork everyone else are going to achieve more. But really what I found out is that it's how the high achievers, it's how they approach challenges, which is different. Some people will quit because they don't want to fail. It's just too hard. I don't want to get dirty, right? But for the high achievers, they fear not trying more than they fear failing. They say, what do I have to lose? I have to try. And I share the story in the book of Dr. Peggy Whitson, who's an astronaut, but that almost didn't happen. She's a biochemist who worked at NASA. Not everyone who works at NASA is an astronaut. And she wanted to be an astronaut, but she kept applying and getting rejected. And she kept applying over and over again for 10 years. And when I interviewed her, I said, Dr. Whitson, why didn't you just quit? Who in their right mind applies for the same job for a decade? And she said, the question was never if I was going to become an astronaut. It was really, it's not a question of if, it was a question of how. What is the strategy that I have not thought of yet? What is the gap between what I can do and what they perceive that I can do? And how do I fill that gap? What do I need to prove? What do I need to show them? And she kept working to close that gap. Now she's in the driver's seat. That's very different. So it's fear not trying more than you fear failing. That's the second one. What do you think about that one?
I think that's a interesting one, because it brought me back to the saying, or the one of the frameworks that Jeff Bezos uses, called the regret framework. I guess is that's where the way you decide if you're going to do something or not is if you're going to look back, even you're in your 80 or 90 years old, saying, do I regret not trying?
Yeah.
Or do I regret trying? And using that approach where you fast forward yourself into the future and then look back and say,
that's right,
I should try, even if I fail, because I will at least not regret not trying.
That's right. And in fact, I quote a friend of mine who's a colonel in the U.S. Army. We happened to be at a conference together, and people were whining and complaining about something. And he, you can always tell when someone's a real leader, they could just stop everyone just with a few words. And he just said, nobody died. Nobody died. He said, that's the only mistake we cannot fix. Everything else can be fixed, and use the information from the failure as data to improve upon. All of a sudden, it's that it becomes that simple, right?
Yeah.
If nobody dies, you try. So I think that's why so many of the Olympians, when the Olympics were postponed for a year because of COVID, they didn't quit. They found other ways to train, even if they couldn't go to their gym, even if they couldn't meet with their trainers. They didn't quit. They just found another way to do it. It wasn't a question of if they would get to the Olympics. The question was how, right? Same thing. All right. You ready for that third one?
Do it.
All right. So you have heard of Kobe Bryant, right? He would go to the gym at 4 o'clock in the morning and he would practice all his layups. It's the same workout that you would see any seventh grader do at school. Nothing changes. Kobe Bryant might have just had fancier sneakers. That's the same thing with all of these high achievers. They don't quit the basics. They keep doing the basic things that made them so great. And even when they're great, they still do it, right? I share a story of an attorney, Neil Katyal. Neil Katyal has argued 50 cases before the Supreme Court of the United States, more than any other minority lawyer. Most lawyers don't argue one. He has argued 50. And I said, Neil, how do you prepare for these cases? And he said, I've been doing the same thing for every single one. He said, there's three things that I do. The first thing is I create a binder that has the answer to every possible question that I might get asked. That he said, I walk into the courtroom, I put that binder on the table in front of me. He said, in 50 cases, I've never opened the binder. But the practice of preparing that binder prepares me for the case. The second thing he does is multiple moot courts. These are simulations where he could practice and rehearse and really fine-tune his arguments. And the third thing is, the night before the opening arguments, he gives the opening arguments to his kids as their bedtime story, because he said if a child can understand it, the court can understand it. And he has done every single one of those practices for the last 50 cases. He doesn't say, I've done 50, I'm on a first name basis with the judges, I don't need to practice anymore. No, he keeps doing it. So that's the thing, is we cannot rest on our laurels. We have to continue. How does that sound to you?
No, that one is an interesting one. I had a hard time really understanding that for some reason. For example, as a CEO, and mm-hmm. I guess it goes back to the similar concept of a beginner's mindset.
Yeah.
On every single thing you try to do. As a CEO, what would something like that look like? A successful CEO, I should say.
So what is it that made you so great? Is it your connections with people, right? Being a leader, being a CEO can be very lonely. People are afraid to come to you because now you're at the top of the heap. But what made you so great was the way you're able to connect with people, connect with anyone. So if that made you great, don't stop doing that just because you're CEO. One of the people who I interviewed was Hondo Gertz, who was the undersecretary of the US Navy. And he said he takes the org chart and he flips it. So the people at the top are actually the lowest ranked people. But he said, who has the most direct information? Those people.
Yes.
And he said, every day.
Yes.
Right? Every day, he said, 30 minutes, he's walking around the office and talking to people every single day.
That's a good one. So they don't get complacent. They just keep
never. Yeah.
It's a good one.
Exactly. All right. You ready for the one that surprised me the most?
Okay.
All right. This one I was not expecting, but I loved as an adult educator. I loved it. You heard of the Mark Cuban and all of these people who read Bill Gates 3 to 8 hours a day. And people say, oh, that's how they became billionaires. That is not how they became billionaires. What made them so successful is that they are able to take two points that people don't see and make those connections. And the reason they're able to make those connections is because they're opening their minds up to new knowledge. Now, they do it by reading. That's how they consume knowledge. There's so many other ways to consume knowledge. You can listen to podcasts such as this one. Hopefully, the listeners are learning something new today. You can read articles. You can read books. You said you read my book, The Success Factor. You can take courses on LinkedIn Learning. I have a bunch of courses I teach on LinkedIn Learning. You can watch webinars. You can listen to lectures. You can get a formal degree if you want, but you don't have to. There's so many other ways that you can consume new knowledge. And once you start doing that and opening your mind up to learn from people who are senior to you, at your level, or junior to you, you will start to be able to make these connections. Now, that last point of learning from everyone around you was such a common thread within all the high achievers who I spoke to. They surrounded themselves with a team of mentors. These are Nobel Prize winners and Olympic medalists. They said, I will go to anyone who has the vision of what I could do, a vision that I don't yet see. Mm-hmm. They surrounded themselves with a team of mentors who believed in them more than they believed in themselves. And I decided to pull on that string because I saw it and I saw its power. And that's why mentoring is the topic of my next book, Financial Times Guide to Mentoring, which comes out in June.
Do you believe every person should have a mentor, I guess, at that point?
Mm-hmm. Not just one. I believe in a team of mentors.
Okay.
The data shows us that those who have mentors out-earn and outperform those who don't. And they have lower burnout, and it's better for the institution because it those who are mentored actually stay at the institution. So it provides greater loyalty, and to replace someone takes a lot of time and is very expensive. So if the people at the top have mentors, why do the rest of us think that we don't need them?
No, that's true. I do talk about how people in their roles, whether you are a CEO or you are a business analyst or a researcher, it's no different than an athlete.
Correct.
Athletes have coaches, they practice, they have a routine, they focus on refining their craft. And unfortunately, most people in their job don't think like that. They think about it as a job, make a paycheck. They're not thinking about how do I make as an example here, how do I make a better pizza tomorrow?
That's right. Are you going for the job or are you going for the career? Very different.
Yeah, yeah. Or just refining the craft. I think the joy is just refining the craft, even if you're just working as a person making pizza at a pizza hut chain. That's very insightful, those four strong areas or pillars. So this one quote that I read in your book that it came from one of your mentors. Actually, before I come to that, I do want to ask about this mentors. One question that I have in my head. How does one... You said a team of mentors for anybody, especially if you're a leader. How does one decide who my mentor should be? Like, how many mentors? What areas? Do I need three? Do I need five?
Yeah, that's three chapters in the book as I talk about it, because it's so critical. I think, first of all, don't worry about the label of mentor, because once you start thinking about who do I give this label to, it becomes very stressful, because you need to pick the right one. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about picking the right one. Pick people that you can learn from. And don't worry about the title. The title comes much later. And in terms of how many, unlimited. I have mentors who are physicians, scientists, educators, finance, military, legal, and I'm working on one in the arts. I think I have a gap there. Basically, anyone I can learn from, to me, is worth having as a mentor. And those mentors evolve and change over time. The mentors I have in my 20s are not going to be my mentors in my 40s, right? Because we change. And that's okay. It's not a life sentence. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's important to understand how to do that. There is a resource if your listeners want to start creating their own mentoring team right now, to give them some thought questions about who should be on the mentoring team. They can go to my website, Ruth Gotian, RUTHGOT, like Tom, IAN, like Nancy, ruthgotian.com/mentoring team. And there is a worksheet they can download.
Awesome. Yeah, finding a good mentor is also not the easiest, because you got to find the one that you can align with and has some time for you. And one of the things you mentioned in your book, as well as high achievers and highly successful people also make good mentors.
Yeah.
As well. Have you found that always to be true, or is that generally true, but maybe not always true?
The way I define success, and I think that helped in how I selected these people who I interviewed, and I interviewed well over 100 of these people for the book, is they had to create a paradigm shift in the way we do things, think about things, and process things. We're doing things differently today because of what they did. As they rise through the ranks, they are pulling other people up with them, because they understand that there's enough light for all of us to shine. And when they get to the apex of their career, they are now mentoring the next generation, either one-to-one or one-to-many model. And I have noticed that if they are Olympians or astronauts or Nobel Prize winners or NBA champions, they were all doing that, of them. So that's why I think it's so important. And I saw them doing it. And what's the way to train that next generation?
Yeah. One thing I will say, though, as I have mentored people in my life, and I have mentors now as well, and I found that I am more inclined to mentor people who are willing to put in some work.
Of course.
I feel like some of them just show up for the meeting, and then they always consistently show up for the meeting. And I try to give them some homework with each mentoring session. It's not big homework. Usually you think about some projects that you want to take up to develop yourself, for example. And if I feel like they have not, it's like my advice is falling on deaf ears, or if I'm wasting time, I basically back off at that point. I'm like, I'm not wasting my time on that. Is that So can you give some advice on that? I don't know if that is me as a mentor or if it is true of every mentor that they're like, I'm not going to waste my time with this person who's not willing to do the work. can you give some advice to people who are seeking mentors on what they need to show to get good mentors?
Yeah, look, people want to help rising stars. People want to help people who want to put in the work and are willing to do the work. And if you ask the mentors, how they measure their success, they measure their success through the output and success of their mentees. So the good ones are going to be very selective. They want to get people who are willing to put in the work and show their curiosity. So you have to, as a mentee, really do that work and meet your mentor at the 50-yard line to see if this is working. Because you know what? If you're not going to put in the work, they're not going to put in the work to mentor you properly. Instead, they're going to choose someone who is really a rising star, right? Because that's what you want to invest your time in, because we don't have remnants of time. Time is a finite resource for us. I will tell you, as a mentor, if you want to check the impact of your mentoring, mm-hmm. is it worth continuing? There is a resource that my co-author and I, Andy LaPata, put together. If you go to mentoring-guide.com, and there's a score app there that you can measure the impact of your mentoring.
Well, that's impressive. What can you give you a high level view on what that scorecard
is? Is it working? Is it not working? How impactful is it? Okay. Worth continuing or not?
Great. All right. So I want to, the question I was going to ask you, it really was about quote that you have in the book from one of your mentors of going for something important and not just interesting.
Yeah.
And is that a common trait? First of all, I want you to explain what that means. And then also explain, is that a common trait you found in all these successful leaders and people?
It absolutely is. So I went back to school later in life. I was 43 years old when I went to get my doctorate, and I was working full time and had a family. And I told my mentor, who never tried to talk me out of it, but when I was about to select a dissertation topic, he said to me, do something important, not just interesting. Because if it's interesting to you, that's great, it will have no impact. But if you pick something that's important, it'll create these ripple effects and it'll impact many people you'll never even have the opportunity to meet. If you're already going to do the work, have that ripple effect. Now, it's so fascinating because years later, when I interviewed Dr. Tony Fauci, who led our COVID response in the United States, he has advised 7-8 US presidents. He has seen every major infectious disease that we had, Zika, SARS, all of them, HIV, AIDS. And I said, how do you pick which infectious disease to focus on? There's so many. And he said, I pick something important, not just interesting. If I could impact millions of people I will never have the opportunity to meet, it's worth investing my time in. So now two people said the same thing to me.
So the thing about important versus interesting is, it has to be important and at least somewhat interesting for you.
Interesting to you because of that first element of success, that intrinsic motivation.
Yeah. Now, in terms of being important, obviously, if it is important enough, it's probably going to be difficult as well. It's not going to be something easy. If it is important,
anything worth having is worth working for, right? It's worth
working for. So that's what I guess also another thing is, they don't take easy projects. The people who are highly successful, they're going for the stars and not.
It's interesting. I'm working with a 2-time Olympic medalist in judo. Big guy, like a mountain, big guy. And he retired from sports, and now he's in his country, he's doing Dancing with the Stars. I said, why in the world are you doing this? This could not be more different from where you came from, and now he's a keynote speaker, etc. He said, it's a challenge, and I don't shy away from a challenge. And not only is he taking the dance lessons of 4 hours a day, he also signed up for yoga and Pilates. I said, why did you do that? He said, because I have to learn to be more graceful. This is the opposite of what I was doing in judo. So they go all in. They're not afraid from the challenge. They fear not trying more than they fear failing. And they go all in. When it's time to learn something, they will learn from anyone who can teach it to them. That's why he'll go far.
That's awesome. This has been very insightful. I could talk on this topic for hours, but I do want to ask one last thing before we conclude this session here. What are some, you said you have some resources online for the Success Factor book.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guide the listeners to specifically what they can look for online?
Sure. So if you go to my website, ruthgotian.com, you will see resources for everything from how to create a mentoring team, how to tap into your intrinsic motivation. And there are also conversation starters, how to start conversations with a stranger, because half the time, how do you find mentors? You need to see who you connect with, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So those are all on my website, ruthgotian.com. Just click on resources, you'll see them all there. And if you want to learn more about mentoring and developing your mentoring team and checking the impact of your mentoring relationship and see a ton of resources around mentoring, that's related to my new book, Financial Times Guide to Mentoring. And those resources can be found at mentoring-guide.com.
Thank you so much for your time, Ruth. I really appreciate it. And this has been extremely helpful for the people on the video. This is the book that I was referring to, The Success Factor, Developing the Mindset and Skill Set for Peak Business Performance. Thanks, Ruth. It was wonderful talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
Sri Chalapa here. Thank you so much for listening to the People Strategy Leaders Podcast. If you are a successful leader or a people strategist who would like to be on this program, please visit engagedly.com/People Strategy Leaders Podcast. If you got something out of this interview, would you share this episode on social media? If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag People Strategy Leaders. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter at Sri Chalapa. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. And thank you to Patrick Ramsey, sound engineer at Kalinga Production Studios, for recording and mixing this show.